So this is her trial when she was still in novitiate. So it's a hard time. But Jesus gave her solution because she obeyed. Obedience, no? That's how shortened the trial spirit time period, because she obeyed her superior. Now, though these are frightening things, the soul should not be too fearful, because God will never test us beyond what we are able to bear. On the other hand, He may never send us as such sufferings, but I write this because it pleases the Lord to let us so pass through such sufferings. It should not be afraid, but insofar as this depends on the soul itself, it should remain faithful to God. Faithful, still, you're faithful, although you can't see much, all darkness. Even in darkness, you believe, still believe. Tunnel, at the end of the tunnel is the light. You haven't arrived at that point. God will do us so no harm because He's love itself. And in this unfathomable love has called it into being. However, when I was so tormented, I myself did not understand this. So afterwards, he can write these things. But by the time he was going through, it's really difficult. Oh my God, I've come to know that I'm not of this earth. You, O Lord, have poured this profound awareness into my soul. My communion is more with heaven than with earth, though I'm in no way neglects my duties. So though she belonged to heaven, but still she have to function as a woman to serve on earth. During those times, I had no spiritual director. I was without any kind of guidance, whatever. I begged the Lord, but He did not give me a director. Jesus Himself has been my master from the days of my infancy up to the present moment. He accompanied me across all the deserts and through all dangers. I see clearly that God alone could have led me through such great perils unharmed, with my soul untarnished, and passing victoriously through all difficulties, immense though they were. Later on, the Lord gave me a director. After such sufferings, the soul finds itself in a state of great purity of spirit and very close to God. But I should add that during these spiritual torments, it is close to God, but it is blind. The soul's vision is plunged into darkness, and though God is nearer than ever to the soul which is suffering, the whole secret consists in the fact that it knows nothing of this. Complete darkness. The soul, in fact, declares that not only has God abandoned it, but it is the object of His hatred. With great melody are the eyes of the soul afflicted. When struck by divine light, the soul affirms that this light does not exist, although it is precisely because this divine light is so bright that it is blinded. So bright as if blind. God is there. Yet despite all, I learned that later that God is closer to a soul at such moment than at others, because it would not be able to endure these trials with the help of ordinary grace alone. So if you can stand, that means God is stand by you. Although you don't feel it, you feel you are the alone, you are the only one perished. But no, God is sustaining you. God's omnipotence and extraordinary grace must be active here. For otherwise, the soul would succumb at the first blow. O Divine Master, what happens in my soul is a work alone. You, O Lord, are not afraid to place the soul on the edge of a terrible precipice where it stands, alarmed and filled with fright. and then you call it back again to yourself. These are your imponderable mysteries. When in the midst of these interior torments, I try to accuse myself in confession of smallest trifles, the priest was surprised that I had not committed graver faults, and he said to me, "If you are as faithful as this to God during these sufferings, this in itself is evidence to me that God is sustaining you, sister, with a special grace, and it is a good thing that you do not understand this." So she is blind, but the spiritual director told her, you are in the light, though she can't see. It is a strange thing, nevertheless, that confessors could never understand me. Lord, set my mind at peace concerning these matters until I met Father Andres, later on Father Sopoko. A few words about confession and confessions and confessors. I should speak only of what I have experienced and gone through within my own soul. There are three things which hinder the soul from drawing profit from confession in these exceptional moments. The first thing, when a confessor has little knowledge of extraordinary ways and shows surprise if a soul discloses to him the great mysteries worked in it by God. Such surprise frightens a sensitive soul, and he notices that the confessor hesitates to give his opinion. And if it does not notice this, it will not be able to be set at peace. But we will have even more doubts about confession than before, because he will sense that the confessor is trying to set it at peace while he himself is uncertain. Or else, he has happened to me, a confessor, unable to penetrate some of the soul's mysteries, refuses to hear confession, showing a sudden fear when a soul approaches the confessional. So if you are so deep in experience with God, if the confessor doesn't have this knowledge, surely he doesn't know how to guide the soul. So it's natural. So they need to look for a better one, a deeper one. How can a soul in this state obtain peace in the confessional when it has come so oversensitive to every word of the priest? In my opinion, at times of such special trials sent by God to a soul, the priest, if he does not understand the soul, should direct it to some other experienced and well-instructed confessor. Redirect. Sorry, I cannot hear your confession. Or else he himself should seek light in order to give the soul what it needs, instead of downrightly denying it confession. For in this way, he is exposing the soul to a greater danger, and more than one soul may well live the road along which God wanted it to journey. This is a matter of great importance, for I have experienced it myself. I myself began to waver. Despite special gifts from God, even though God himself reassures me, I have nevertheless always wanted to have the church's seal as well. So a confessor, to make sure what she got is right from God. Though sometimes the devil can do some other things, you know, can be mixed with some other temptations, and you know, you don't know what. They need someone to tell it. The second thing, the confessor does not allow the soul to express itself frankly and shows impatience. The soul then falls silent and does not say anything, but by this, profits nothing. It profits even less when a confessor, without really knowing the soul, proceeds to put it to the test. Instead of helping the soul, he does it harm. The soul is aware that the confessor does not know it, because he did not allow it to lay itself open fully as regards both its graces and its misery. And so the test is ill-adapted. I have been submitted to some tests in which I have had to love. I have expressed this better thus. The confessor is the doctor of the soul. But how can a doctor prescribe a suitable remedy if he does not know the nature of the sickness? Never will he be able to do so. For either the remedy will not produce the desired effect, or else it will be too strong and will aggravate the illness, and sometimes, God forbid, even bring about death. I'm speaking from my own experience, because in certain instances, it was the Lord himself who directly sustains me. The third thing, it also happens sometimes that the confessor makes light of little things. There's nothing little in the spiritual life. Sometimes a seemingly insignificant thing will disclose a matter of great consequence and will be, for the confessor, a beam of light which helps him to get to know the soul. Many spiritual undertones are concealed in little things. A magnificent building will never rise if we reject the insignificant bricks. God demands great purity of certain souls, and so he gives them a deeper knowledge of their own misery. Illuminated by lights from on high, the soul can better know what pleases God and what does not. Sin depends upon the degree of knowledge and light that exists within the soul. The same is true of imperfections. Although the soul knows that it is only sin in the strictest sense of the term which pertains to the sacrament of penance, yet these petty things are of great importance to a soul which is tending to sanity, and the confessor must not treat them lightly. The patience and kindness of the confessor open the way to the innermost secret of the soul. The soul unconsciously, as it were, reveals its abysmal depth and feels stronger and more resistant. It fights with greater courage and tries to do things better because it knows it must give an account of them. I will mention one more thing regarding the confessor. It is his duty to occasionally put to test, to trial, to exercise, to learn whether he is dealing with straw, with iron, or with pure gold. Each of these three types of souls needs different kinds of training. The confessor must, and this is absolutely necessary, form a clear judgment of each soul in order to know how heavy a burden it can carry at certain times, in certain circumstances, or in particular situations. As for myself, it was only later on, after many negative experiences, that when I saw that I was not understood, I no longer lay bare my soul or allowed my peace to be disturbed. But this happened only when all these graces had already been submitted to the judgment of a wise, well-instructed, and experienced confessor. Now I know what to go by in certain cases. So after so much negative experiences with the confessor doesn't understand her, so she rode away. She wrote this down, first priest. But anyway, transfer is the best. If you cannot understand this, so some other one might. And again, I would like to say three words to the soul that is determined to strive for sanity and to derive fruit, that is to say, benefit from confession. Wise to you. First word, complete sincerity and openness. Even the holiest and wisest confessor cannot forcibly pour into the soul what he desires if it is not sincere and open. And insincere, secretive, so risk great dangers in his spiritual life. And even the Lord Jesus himself does not give himself to such a soul on a high level, because he knows it would derive no benefits from these special graces. It's openness, sincerity. Please don't be sincere. Once you say, when you go to confession, the priest study well. Jesus himself is the one who listens to you, not the priest. He just study well. So if you before Jesus, you hide something, not sincere enough, you got no grace. Second word. Can you guess? Second word. Humility. A soul does not benefit as it should from the sacrament of confession if it is not humble. Pride keeps it in darkness. The soul neither knows how nor is it willing to probe with precision the depths of its own misery. It puts on a mask and avoids everything that might bring it recovery. So you will stay in the same state. Third word, obedience. Always. A disobedient soul will win no victory, even if the Lord Jesus himself in person were to hear its confession. The most experienced confessor will be of no help whatsoever to such a soul. The disobedient soul exposes itself to great misfortunes, and it will make no progress towards perfection, nor will it succeed in the spiritual life. God lavishes his graces most generously upon a soul, but it must be an obedient soul. So these three words: sincere, sincerity, openness. The second, humility. The third, obedience. Oh, how pleasing are the hymns of flowing from a suffering soul. All heaven delights in such a soul, especially when it is tested by God. It mournfully sings out its longing for him. Great is its beauty, because it comes from God. The soul walks through the jungle of life, wounded by God's love. With one foot only, it touches the ground. When a soul has come out of these tribulations, it is deeply humble. Its purity of soul is great. It knows better without need of reflecting, as it were, what it ought to do as a given moment and what to forbear. It feels the lightest touch of grace and is very faithful to God. It recognizes God from afar and continuously rejoices in him. It discovers God very quickly in other souls and in its environment in general. The soul has been purified by God himself. God as pure spirit introduces the soul to a life that's purely spiritual. God himself has first prepared and purified the soul. That is, he has made it capable of close communion with himself. The soul, in a state of loving repose, communes spiritually with the Lord. It speaks to God without the need of expressing itself through the senses. God fills it with his light. The enlightened mind sees clearly and distinguishes the various degrees of the spiritual life. It recognizes that state when its union with God was imperfect, where the senses were involved and the spirit was linked with the sense in a manner exalted as special, to be sure, but not yet perfect. There is higher and more perfect union with God, namely, intellectual union. Here, the soul is safer from illusions. Its spirituality is purer and more profound. In a life where the senses are involved, there is more danger of illusion. In a life where the senses are involved, there's more danger of illusion. So you have to more spirit, more than just the feeling. Sometimes can cheat you, you know, the feeling senses can cheat you. Both for the soul and Freud's confessor, prudence must play a great part. There are moments when God introduces the soul to a purely spiritual state. The senses deem and seemingly that the soul is most closely united to God. It is immersed in the deity. Its knowledge is complete and perfect, not sporadic as before, but total and absolute. It rejoices in this. But I want to say more about those moments of child. In those times, the confessor must have patience with such a soul. But a soul must have even greater patience with itself. So no matter what, just be patient. If it comes, it just comes. At times, you have to go through. You cannot just walk in and out. Just imagine when you're in a train. It's going through the channel, the tunnel. It's still dark in the dark. It's moving forward. Even though you walk up and down, it cannot be faster. Sit down quietly, patient. It needs patience. Long patience for the confessor, also patience of yourself. At times, you have no light, still no light, and asking, and still no light, still darkness. Enjoy this darkness. That's what to say. God never left you completely in darkness, although in darkness, but still is sustaining you. God is there. That's our belief. That's our trust. When you can see, how can you say you trust? You know, said that was Thomas says, no, you see me, so you believe. Blessed are those who doesn't see and believe, right? So we live out this week. Trust, believe, and be humble.